Zombies eat people, and then they change to zombies.
Say how old you are.
5.
Can you tell me what they sound like?
They sound like...
How do they sound? Can I ask you a question? If you saw a zombie, what would you do?
I'll run away!
Same thing for you, Aiden? What would you do if you saw a zombie?
Run away.
You're gonna run away?
Okay. Nobody's gonna fight them?
I'm not gonna fight them yet. But you have to give me a magic wand!
I will fight them!
And it will disappear! I can fight them!
I'm here with author Kevin Wayne Williams, who wrote the book Everything I Know About Zombies I Learned in Kindergarten. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Aisha.
Hey. I want to talk to you a little bit about what gave you the idea to write a horror novel in the first place.
A horror novel in the first place?
Yeah.
As opposed to...
Something nice or fun.
I think there's a lot of people who would argue I'm simply a horrible person and this horror would come naturally. I'm actually not much of a horror reader. You know, it's a little strange. I don't read a lot of horror. I do read, you know, Dean Koontz. I used to read fairly religiously. Stephen King, I recognize that he's a fine author. I very rarely read much of him. And the true gory horror stuff isn't very interesting to me. How many ways can you write about people getting ripped apart, you know, to keep it interesting? There's just not many ways. So I guess I surprised myself in some ways by writing a horror novel as opposed to science fiction, which would be what you would normally consider more my direction. But in the terms of this particular book, it was really kind of annoyance. I have always been a zombie movie fan. You know, I can remember the day my dad came home from the original Night of the Living Dead back in 67, and he was really creeped out because that was a really extreme movie for that time. But I've always watched, you know, everything George Romero did, and when The Walking Dead started coming out on TV, I began to watch it, and I just found its portrayal of Georgia annoying as all get out, because I spent a lot of my life in Georgia, not, you know, business purposes, Atlanta, Savannah mainly. And you go to either of those cities and you look around and they're, you know, a third, maybe a half black. And you watch The Walking Dead, especially the first season, and it was all white guys except that one great big Mack truck of a guy, you know, T-Bone or T-Rod or something like that. You know, it was incredibly pale. And, you know, I could envision, you know, that, you know, maybe you could get a Georgia that looked like that if you were feeding the blacks to the zombies to keep them away from the white folk. But I didn't think any of the characters were portrayed as being that kind of person. So it was just ridiculously pale. The other part of it that got me was Carl. I didn't like Carl much in the comics, and I hated it even more in the TV show. Because he's not a character, or he wasn't at first. He was just someone that wandered around getting lost. You know, whenever he got lost, Lori and Rick would have to go, "Where's Carl?" And he'd chase after Carl for half an episode. You know, that's not really much of a character, you know. He's a boy, he wears a cowboy hat. You know, that's not a characterization in my mind. Those two things were really what led me to write the book I did, which was, you know, first, let's darken it up a bit. You know, there should be not all white meat for the zombies to eat. And, you know, the idea that a child would wind up wrapped up in this also, you know, just kind of piqued my imagination, that you shouldn't really expect that every kid was, you know, in the company of some faithful guardian, that some of them were going to wind up out on their own. And not all of them were going to die. Most of them certainly would, but not all of them would. And that was what got me started on Letitia. It was a little girl who figured out how not to die. I wandered on a bit. Probably time for the next question.
No, I don't think that was too bad. I do want to talk about Letitia a little bit. My take on her when I was reading the book was that I have never known a 9-year-old to be this competent as Leticia is. She is quite something.
I was actually very careful. You know, you can get away with the idea. I can't argue when you come away at the end that the idea that Leticia was fairly competent. I can't argue that. But I think you'd have a hard time putting your finger on a single part of the book where a 9-year-old couldn't do it. I was very careful to keep her skills down at the level where, yeah, a 9-year-old could do it. You know, maybe it's a little extreme to think they'll do 45 right things in a row like Leticia did, but not one of the 45 things in itself is something you can look at and say, no way a 9-year-old could do that. If you've got a counterexample, I'll talk about it.
So if you're listening again, Leticia is a young girl in the South Bronx who goes to pick up her sister from kindergarten, and the zombie apocalypse happens. And she takes it upon herself to try to protect an entire kindergarten class during what would be the apocalypse, you know?
Yeah, well,
Yeah.
I don't know if she takes it upon herself. She winds up, you know, when people talk about her being competent, I think a part of it is, in a sense, it's my fault as a writer. And so I'll apologize in advance to people that get the wrong impression. But Leticia's stuck. When you roll through that first chapter, she's not really deciding to do things in that first chapter. What she wants to do is run. But she can't run without her sister. And by the time she gets to her sister, it's hit the fan. There's no running anymore. She's in the room. She can hear the things outside. And she knows that if she tries to jump out the window or get out one of the back ways, that whatever it is out there, she's not sure what it is, but she's seen some of her teachers be killed. She's hearing the noises. She's hearing gunfire from outside. And it's not like she decides to save that class. It's like, I'm here. If I let the little kids scream and cry, people are going to hear them and they're going to know I'm here. So I've got no choice. If I'm going to live through this, I have to keep everybody quiet. I have to get everybody hidden. And she wasn't being a hero. And she's really, it's really not into very late in the book where Leticia does anything you can't look at and realize that the primary beneficiary of Leticia's action is Leticia. She's a liar. She lies to the kids all the time.
Well, that's not different than any parent would normally do with
it's
young
not.
Children.
Yeah, it's true, but I mean, you know, she lies to them and she pumps them full of propaganda. I mean, how many times can you listen to the little engine that could?
No, I mean, again, that feels fairly normal. Out of curiosity, why pick the Bronx? You know, why not just
set
your story in Georgia as well, you know?
It was an accident. You know, whenever I write, I just start typing. And then I kind of sit back and I look at what I typed and I say, got to fix those parts. But I liked my title. The first words that left my fingers were the fall of PS-42. And that was the chapter title of chapter one. And then when I went in, I looked around, there's actually about 35 PS-42s in the world. And one of them happens to be sitting there and down there in Mott Haven. And when I looked at it, I realized that it was a very different place than anyone had ever set a zombie novel.
You're right about that.
I mean, it's just, and I wound up realizing I could write a different book there.
What have readers of your novels had said about their experience of your book, especially Bronx residents? Have any Bronx residents read the book?
I actually wound up in an email conversation with them. Well, you know, Sammy's Mini Market down in Mott Haven. If the owner of Sammy's is listening, I'm sorry I used your store. Maybe I'm happy you used your store. There really is a Sammy's Mini Market. And that's one of the first places that Leticia sets as a goal to get to because, you know, food. They have food in many markets, and she needed some. But they wind up for a while squatting in an apartment above Sammy's mini market. And I heard from the woman that lives in the apartment on the third floor above Sammy's mini market. And she was really creeped out. It really did bother her, the idea that suddenly her home had become the site of a zombie novel.
I'm curious about, as you did research, you found out about this island, like, how did you get there?
It's the same, you know, once I realized I had the, you know, that I was in the South Bronx,
mm-hmm.
You know, it becomes a big effort of researching your area, and I think that's an important part of any novel, is that even if you don't bring every detail of it out, you should be reading and you should really study your area. And it's at the point where, and I think one of the reasons I get positive feedback from Bronx residents, you know, when people look up on the street in the book, the signs they see actually match the signs you would see from that location.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's when little Jose looks out from behind the dumpster, mm-hmm. and he sees the pictures on the wall, that's actually the signs and pictures he would see at the barber shop and little tailor. They're across the street from the dumpster he's hiding in. That detail comes out. And you can't get to that area without noticing this neat abandoned island out in the middle of the river. I mean, it's abandoned. No one's lived there for 50 years. It's got prison bars. You know, it's got film a horror movie here written all over it. And since I was writing a book instead of a movie, I just set the novel there. But North Brother Island is a fascinating place to me. The idea of this little abandoned island in the middle of the Bronx that nobody ever talks about, but it's there. For people listening, North Brother Island is a real location in the Bronx. And it used to be a leprosary, a leprosy sanitarium back in the early years. And Typhoid Mary, you know, when Typhoid Mary was exiled out of New York, she wound up that her exile was actually served on North Brother Island. In the early 50s, it was turned into a heroin rehabilitation ward. And it stayed a heroin rehabilitation ward for about 15 years. And then it was finally abandoned. And Riverside Hospital is still out there. It's covered in vines and plants.
Yeah,
probably a ghost or two.
Yeah, nature has really taken that place back.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's like we have a famous horror author who lived in the, you know, the Bronx area, Poe, you know, for Poe House. It's a celebrated space. And yet, I think you're the only author I know of that's written about us in this setting. Like,
oh, as a horror novel set in the Bronx, there was actually one other, but I am, so far as I can tell, in a field of two. I think there's only been one other.
Yeah, that's the rub.
You get the short end of a lot of sticks in the Bronx.
Yeah, we noticed. I think I heard that you regret the title just a bit because it has the word kindergarten in it.
It makes people think it's a children's book. And there's very few books that have children in them that aren't for children. They exist. There's Lord of the Flies. You know, that's a much more famous example. There's one of my favorite books from when I was young, The Other. I don't know if you've ever heard that one.
Which one did you say?
The Other by Thomas Tryon.
Mm-mm, never heard of it.
Everybody should pick that up after they buy my book. They should go buy a copy of that one. But it's a great scary book about a pair of twins, and they're 13. Typically, if you write a book about kids, it's for kids, and if you write a book about adults, it's for everybody. And there's very few books that are about 9-year-olds that no 9-year-old should read. And I have one group of people doesn't pick up my book because they think it's for kids, and another people think it's a satire. And it's neither one. You know, it's a serious horror novel. Designed to scare the hell out of you.
Well, it works at that. So yeah, Mr. Williams, what are you working on next? Are you working on any more books?
Well, I've got two books down the pike coming out. Actually three, but two that are related to this one. I'm working on Bronx Apocalypse. Well, when you read this book, there's a whole little subplot set in Hunt's Point. I got a lot of positive feedback about that subplot. Basically, in that the Hunt's Point, residents of Hunt's Point, they decided early on that the zombie apocalypse was actually Whitey's way of getting them. That this was, you know, a plot to wipe out the black man. And they take over the food depository and try to fight their way out from there. And I put that in originally as a piece of dark humor. And I got a lot of positive feedbacks from readers that, you know, that was actually a much more plausible scenario than I'd given it credit for. And I expanded that out into a co-novel that I'm still working on. And there is also a direct sequel to this book, Children in the Hands of an Angry God. And I'm working on that one as the surviving children try to make their way south out of New York. And I'm also working with a woman named Amber Lee Jones, who's an artist originally from Brooklyn. And she is working with me on a graphic.
Really?
Novel adaptation of the book, yes.
Oh, I love graphic novels.
And
so totally.
We did change the title. It will be called PS43 Survives. That should be getting released sometime, probably the middle of next year. If you've never tried to do a graphic novel, you'd be amazed at how hard it is. You know, as a writer, it's really easy for me. You know, it takes me about 10 minutes to write a page, and it takes her about a day to draw it. So
yeah,
I have to recognize where the effort goes.
So it seems like you have really caught like the Bronx bug. You are inspired. You keep writing about us. At first,
well,
what was so
you're neglected? You're neglected.
Not by you. So yeah, thank you. That is dope. Where can people find you if they wanna know more?
Well, the easiest place to look is at motthavenbooks.com.
Mm-hmm.
And for those that live in the Bronx, spelling Motthaven will be easier. For the rest of you, Motthaven Books is MotthavenBooks.com. Motthaven Books. And you'll find links to my blog and, strangely enough, links to where to buy the book. You know, I'm sorry about that, but that is a commercial enterprise in many ways.
So the book again is Everything I Know About Zombies I Learned in Kindergarten. And this was Kevin Wayne Williams. Thank you for your time.
All righty.